With visitor levels rising every year to the national parks, the Park Service is on a long-term plan to increase accessibility to pretty much everyone. I discussed this with Jeremy Buzzell, chief of the National Accessibility Branch at the National Park Service. He started with the strategy underneath it all.
We had a release of our five-year strategic plan for accessibility back in August of 2014 after a group of stakeholders from around the service spent about 18 months working on it. And the goal really that underlies that report is not to say that within 5 years of release, all of the parks and everything within our parks will be accessible to people with disabilities. Rather, it is really aimed at being a systems change plan that says, here is how over the next 5 years we plan to change the culture of the National Park Service to make it so that accessibility is baked into our operations and it's an intrinsic part of what we do rather than being considered after the fact or sort of being an add-on to what we do after we've done things. So the report, in order to achieve that, it has three central goals. So the first goal is, what do we do to create a welcoming environment for people with disabilities? The second goal is to make sure that we have our systems built so that every activity or facility or program that we do from this point forward has accessibility built into it. We don't build a building and then say, oh, we need to go back and put in a ramp or put in accessible doors or change the bathroom, that from the ground up we do things accessibly. And then the third goal really focuses on looking at all of our existing infrastructure and existing facilities and existing programs and figuring out how do we then upgrade what already exists and how do we prioritize the way in which we do upgrades so that we have the greatest impact.
Well, let's back up here for a moment because accessibility seems like it would be a much more complicated function for something like the National Park Service and the National Parks than, say, a given building or a restaurant or something. Because, you know, to be realistic, you can't make climbing the Half Dome accessible to everybody. But yet there are many, many things that people do and a great range of activities that happen once people arrive at parks. So how did you know where, how far to go with a given place so that you could ensure full accessibility within what's possible?
Yes, you are absolutely correct that the national parks present a distinct challenge when it comes to accessibility because, as you stated, many of our parks are preserving natural wonders. Many of our parks are preserving history. So we don't have the ability to simply say, okay, pave that trail over here or make a hole in the side of that building over there and put in an elevator. That sometimes is not an option if we want to preserve the history or the natural wonders that people are coming there to see in the first place. So what we look at is there are multiple kinds of accessibility. Most people, when they think accessibility, automatically associate that with physical accessibility. So it is a person who is in a wheelchair who needs access to a building. But we actually look at a broad range, which is physical accessibility, as well as what we call program accessibility, as well as accessibility to information and technology. So what we want to think about is not only can somebody get into the building, but once they've gotten into the building or into the trail or whatever feature that we have there, can they access what's going on in there, whether or not it is exhibits, it is tours, it is a video. So what can we do to create an entry to exit experience? Meaning, if I want to come to your park and I want to learn about it online, is the right of information available to me in a format that I can use it? So, for example, if I am blind and I want to find out about a park to go to, is the information on your website accessible to me using technology that interfaces with the internet for me? When I get to the park, you know, is the parking lot accessible? Is the path from the parking lot to a visitor center accessible? Once I get into the visitor center, are the exhibits that we have accessible? Are the videos that we have accessible? So we face that challenge of that. How do we make things accessible from entry to exit for the full range of disabilities, not just physical disabilities, but folks who have difficulty hearing, folks who have difficulty seeing, folks who might have learning disabilities. And then you have to put that into the diverse context of this where no two parks are the same. So we don't have the ability to say, okay, every park, to make your park accessible, you have to have one of these. Well, having one of those might not make sense in your park because your park doesn't do that activity. Or we can't simply say every water experience needs to have this kind of accessible dock or this kind of beach access mat. Well, not every water experience is the same in the National Park Service. We're dealing with lakeshores, we're dealing with rivers, we're dealing with oceans. And since no two are the same, that diversity is one of the challenges that we face when we're trying to make things accessible.
In many ways, you have the same challenges as museums, of which the federal government operates many outside of NPS. But it seems like there's a body of knowledge you could draw on from places like museums.
We are not above dealing great ideas from other institutions. We work very closely, for example, with the Smithsonian. We work with the folks from the Kennedy Center. So there is a body of folks and a body of knowledge out there, and it is kind of a small community of people, all of whom know each other. We have a cooperative agreement with an institution called the National Center on Accessibility based out at Indiana University, who have been experts and specialists in accessible outdoor recreation for state, local, and government entities. We work closely with the Access Board, and then we work a lot with our sister bureaus here in the Department of the Interior, and we work with, like, the Forest Service, for example. So yes, we collaborate and coordinate, and we steal ideas from other people all the time, and hopefully they steal some from us.
We're speaking with Jeremy Bazell, the chief of the National Accessibility Branch at the National Park Service. And you've got a long ways to go. I'm reading the report, the five-year plan, and you say in the more than 400 national park units across the country, you've got visitor centers without accessible restrooms, water fountains, and entrances. Pretty basic stuff. And then you get to the parking lots and sidewalks and so on, even before the higher level things like understanding exhibits and being able to make those accessible. And so it sounds like, how do you prioritize where you go at this?
Well, that is one of the things that we are working through the process of the strategic plan to bring stakeholders through the Park Service together, as well as stakeholders from the disability community, in order to maybe decide, well, you know, if we have only so much time and we have only so much money, what are the ways that we can make the greatest impact? You know, do we do that based on visitation, for example? You know, do you say, okay, you have parks with high visitation, and then within those parks, you also have, you know, some things where a lot of people do this experience and fewer people do that experience. So is that one of the approaches that we would take? But there are also approaches that say, well, we have many things around the Park Service that are very low-hanging fruit. A lot of the problems that we have, for example, you know, as you said, accessibility in a bathroom. There are a number of things that could be fixed in a bathroom, you know, that with the right training and information, one of our facilities maintenance crews could go out and fix tomorrow. So it's probably going to have to be a combination. As we talk with people, it's going to have to be a combination of approaches that says, you know, are there small bites that we can take out system-wide where we say, you know, this is a problem that's low-hanging fruit that we can tackle system-wide versus, okay, we're going to have to target a particular park or a particular kind of park or a particular kind of experience. In order to hit some of these priorities. And that is actually one of the things that that through the strategic plan we're engaged in now, where we're provided with some funding in order to do what we're calling a targeted accessibility improvement program, where we have selected a set of prevalent experiences across the Park Service, meaning most parks have trails, most parks have camping, most parks have historic structure, we have battlefields, we have monuments, we have visitor centers. And so what we are trying to do with our Target Accessibility Improvement Program is select some parks where we can create that entry-to-exit experience I was talking about within those highlighted areas that are prevalent experiences across the National Park Service, to develop what we call models of best practice and universal design, which is an industry term.
That design approach seems to be getting more and more pervasive.
Yep. So we're trying to take those funds and create some universally designed entry to exit models of these kinds of experiences, so that we can then, I don't want to say replicate them at other parks, because again, I said that there's such a great deal of diversity. There's no such thing as just saying, well, we're going to cut and paste these procedures. But what we can do is we can provide guidance to other parks that say, if you look at this best practice model we have developed over here, you can use this information in the context of your improvements that you need to make. So what we're hoping to do is make it so the next park doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. They've got something to look at. They've got some processes and procedures and good examples of how they can transform what they're doing based on the work that was done at other parks funded through this initiative.
I wanted to ask you about visitor trends. I think it's accurate to say that the numbers of visitors in general to the national parks is on the rise. All you have to do is see some of those traffic jams in the summer. And is it also fair to say that the numbers of people with disabilities might be rising faster as visitors than the general population?
I think that is absolutely what we would imagine, just from trends in the general population. The 2010 census found that there were about 57 million Americans with disabilities, which is about 20% of the population. But as we look at returning veterans who are coming back with disabilities, as we're looking at aging baby boomers, the statistics in the general population definitely indicate that you have a rise in disability in the general population. And then if you couple that with the fact that we know some of the core audience for national parks are older generations, we have been assuming that we will see a growth in individuals with disabilities who are visiting, as well as a need to attract individuals with disabilities as a new audience for the national parks. Because in working with the disability community for as many years as I've worked with them, many don't see themselves in the national parks, because when they picture a national park, again, it's trails, it's mountains, it's buildings that are difficult to get into. And we really want to figure out how to demystify that, because we have so many great accessible trails in our parks. We have videos all over the country that are captioned for people with hearing disabilities. We have audio descriptive services. We have assistive listening services. I will not tell you that it is everywhere in every single park, but we have hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of experiences and features available that we have to figure out how to do a better job of getting the word out, so that we can attract more individuals with disabilities to come to our parks, because just like anyone else, they're their parks. And if we are not accessible, we're not only affecting that visitor's experience, but we're affecting the experience of that person's traveling companion, because those folks are grandparents, their parents, their children. So if they can't do something, the people they're with can't do that something either.
And it's fair to say, I think, too, that in the disability community has greatly enhanced the view of what people with disabilities can actually do and accomplish. And you see people with paddles, you know, running at Olympic speeds and so forth. And so that gets me to goal one, which is creating a welcoming environment. It's probably not enough to say, well, we've got an accessible bathroom. It's around there in the back. Go down the hall and kind of hide it away. It has to be front and center, doesn't it?
Well, so what we would like to see really
not the bathroom, but the welcoming environment, I meant.
Oh, yes, correct. So what we would like to see is we'd like to see what we consider to be seamless environments. And that would be through, as we discussed earlier, using universal design, which means there isn't a separate entrance, there isn't a separate bathroom, it's all integrated together. And so that's what we're looking for, so that I, as a person with a disability, I don't have to have a separate experience from my family or the people that I'm traveling with. So for us to create a welcoming environment, one of the first things is we have to make sure that our people who are on the front lines are well-trained, and they themselves know about what kind of accessibility features are available in their parks. They know how to respond to requests for assistance if somebody needs an interpreter or needs some kind of modification made to one of our programs. We need to make sure that we've got better information out there so that people can plan a trip. And a simple example of that, I would say, is if I go to a trail and we do a good job, our trailhead sign will tell you the information that you need to have to make a decision about whether or not you are able to use that trail. So that's not up to me to tell you whether or not this is an easy or a difficult trail. What I need to tell you is, here's the steepest grade on the trail, here's the length of the trail, here's the kind of surface that the trail has, so that you can assess your own limitations to decide, is this for me or is this not for me? Because you're right, who are we to judge what people are capable of? It's about giving them the information they need to make the decisions about what's right for them.
We're speaking with Jeremy Bazell. He is the National Accessibility Branch Chief at the National Park Service. And I guess goal two, which is to ensure new facilities are fully accessible, relates to goal one, which is creating a welcoming environment, because as you build new things, then you can incorporate these principles that are now known to us.
Yeah, that's correct. And the other challenge really is if we build something or we start a new program and we have not made it accessible and we discover that after the fact, then we have created a new expense because we have to go back and we have to retroactively change it to make it accessible. What we would really like is we would like people at the planning phase of a project to be thinking about what will we do to make this accessible. And that even starts with just deciding, what is the story that we plan to tell with this new exhibit, or what is the mission that we're trying to achieve in building this building? And from there you can decide, okay, how do we make sure that I can be a part of this story and a part of this experience, regardless of whether I'm in a wheelchair, regardless of whether I can hear, regardless of whether I can see. So we want people to think about that in terms of how they physically design their structures, and in terms of how they develop media and exhibits. For example, if you think about accessibility of a movie that you are creating for a visitor center, if you think about it up front, you actually change the way you write the movie itself, because you need to build in pauses for audio description, for example. You might put different things in different places in the screen in order to accommodate where you have put captioning on the screen so that it's not covering up important information. And those are the kinds of things that we're saying, okay, let's make sure we get that right the first time so that when a visitor walks through our doors, they don't have to ask questions or seek out other things in order to get their needs met. They're just there and they're met up front.
And of course, the National Park Service has that nearly $12 billion backlog of repair and maintenance to its 400 plus units. And so that gets to goal three, which is as you upgrade or repair, then you want to build in the accessibility features that may not be there now.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we have been talking about throughout the system is, in our opinion, really there is no project that is not an accessibility project. You might decide, wow, our bathroom is in really bad shape and it's really old and we need to redo our bathroom. That is a visitor services project, but in our opinion, it's also an accessibility project, because if you're going to go through the trouble of redoing that bathroom, well, then we should make sure it's a universally designed bathroom, in the process. If you've got a trail that was hit by a flood and you're going to have to rebuild the trail, okay, well, why don't we rebuild it in an accessible way, so that the difference in cost between building a new trail and building a new accessible trail is pretty minimal compared to the difference in cost between building a trail and then having to redo it to make it accessible.
And do you think that overall that these accessibility measures, this five-year plan, and as you roll this out over the next many years, in many ways makes the National Park Service facilities easier for pretty much everyone? Because if you look at people as on a continuum, and not there's some wall between those that are disabled and those that are not, there are people that are like really nearsighted and might like to see larger print, for example, or people might have just a touch of hearing issues, and so they could benefit from what is there for those with serious hearing disabilities. And some people maybe don't quite have the mobility they did, but they don't consider themselves having disabilities. But in some ways, all of this makes it easier for anyone who would care to come there.
Absolutely, and that's part of the theory behind using universal design, is that it greatly broadens the audience that you can work with or who can experience something. For example, if we put tactile models into a museum, well, who are the first people that use them? It's children. So now we have enhanced the experience for people who can't see, and we've enhanced the experience for people who have children. So we feel like universal design is just good design.
Jeremy Bazell is chief of the National Accessibility Branch at the National Park Service. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click Share with Friends.